Blog Talk Radio.
Hi everyone, welcome to The Whole Scoop. This is a health and wellness radio show where our guests are always highly credentialed in their fields. The goal of this program is to present different and sometimes opposite perspectives to allow the listeners to make informed decisions about what might be the right health approach for them. I am your host, Carol Ferraci, a registered licensed dietitian who has practiced for over 30 years. I'm also the founder of Naturally Nutrition. You can check me out at www.naturallynutritioninc.com. As a healthcare practitioner, it is important for me to provide you highly qualified guests on a variety of topics in order to promote your own health and wellness. Tonight's show is acupuncture versus dry needling. Which one is right for you? Please let me remind you that while our guests are always highly credentialed on the topic of discussion, it is recommended that you seek medical advice prior to implementing any and all interventions discussed on the program. The call-in number is 347-855-8894. You can also direct questions and comments to www.blogtalkradio.com/thewholescoop. Remember to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Blog Talk Radio. Again, the call-in number is 347-855-8894. We will be taking questions during the show, and at which time I will be calling out the last four digits of the telephone number. If you're calling in with a question, please remember to press the number 1 in order to become a part of the queue for questions. I'm so pleased to tell you who we have on the show tonight. We have two doctors, Dr. Kathleen Levy and Dr. Scott Barnett. Dr. Kathleen Levy holds a master's degree in Oriental medicine and has been in practice for 23 years. She's taught Oriental medicine for 21 years. She's a co-founder of Dragon Rises College of Oriental Medicine, along with her teacher, Dr. Leon Hammer. She teaches at Dragon Rises and supervises in the student clinic. She maintains a very busy practice and pharmacy and has worked for the last 7 years with a computer software developer testing and creating acupuncture practice management system specifically addressing GMP compliance requirements. Kathleen has been married 34 years and has two daughters and is expecting her third grandchild. Her youngest daughter is also an acupuncturist. She gardens and is building a locally collected tinctured herb pharmacy as an adjunct to her Chinese herbal pharmacy. She continues her study of Chinese medicine as well as ongoing study of medicinal herbs from around the world. You can contact her at kathleen.levy@gmail.com. Joining Kathleen tonight is Dr. William Scott Barnett. He's a physical therapist and an acupuncture physician and is GCS certified. He's graduated with honors in physical therapy from Florida Atlantic University. He's board certified physical therapist in geriatric physical therapy with a master's in Oriental medicine from the Florida School of Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine. He's the former director of rehabilitation in North Florida Medical Center and the former clinical instructor and adjunct professor of University of Florida School of Physical Therapy. Currently, he's the director of the Still Point Therapy Center in Gainesville, Florida. You can find him at stillpointtherapycenter.com. So let's bring them on. Kathleen, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Hi, welcome. Scott, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's so nice to have you. This topic, I have to tell you, when I started to, I actually had a client a couple of months ago where I was looking for acupuncture as a modality, and I came across dry needling. Someone said, well, what about dry needling? And, of course, I was completely just blind to what dry needling actually is and what the difference was. So I thought, well, wouldn't this be interesting to kind of bring this out to the open and let people know for sure what's happening. So thank you for joining me with this tonight. And I really kind of want to just start with that. Let's talk about acupuncture. What is it? Why is it important? Because I think everybody pretty much has heard of acupuncture. Everybody at least has heard of it. Other people have tried it. But there are some people out there that go, ooh, needles. And, they may not actually understand. And then as far as dry needling goes, I think more people might be exposed to dry needling than they even think. So there are ways, there are reasons for both. But then we're going to talk a little bit later, too, about why there may be some differences between the two and how those are faring with the professions. So, Kathleen, do you want to start? I'm going to go with first name basis tonight, if that's okay with you. Everybody okay with that?
I just want to clarify that I'm not a doctor. I'm a acupuncture physician, and I'm also a licensed registered nurse, but I'm not a doctor. So,
okay,
I just wanted to clarify that.
Good at that. Thank you for the clarification.
Okay.
And Scott, I'm assuming it's the same for you then?
Yes, not a medical doctor like an MD.
Right. Okay. Okay. So that being said, let's just talk about acupuncture for a minute. Kathleen, do you want to take that one and kind of give an overview of what
acupuncture is? Acupuncture is actually a part of Oriental medicine, and Oriental medicine is a complete form of medicine that involves many different modalities, acupuncture being one of them. Acupuncture involves understanding the meridians of the body, which are associated with the flow of energy in the body, similar to blood vessels, similar to lymphatic systems, similar to nerves, but actually a separate entity. They've been described as very filament-like. They've actually been identified now in some studies from Korea and other countries. And so the concept that acupuncture meridians are real has definitely been established, which is a really good thing because there have been some statements that they don't exist, but they do. Acupuncture points are similar to little swirls or vortexes of energy that allow energy to flow above or below, or speed it up or slow it down. There's about 365 of those described in the body, but there's also the acknowledgement that they can arise at any time and any place. And when they do arise spontaneously, they're referred to as ashi points, which means that's the spot. And often they are associated with an accumulation or stagnation of energy that causes them to become painful. And so these ashi points are some of the very earliest of described points in acupuncture. And those are the ones that are frequently referred to also as trigger points. Acupuncture is, its goal is to maintain health or correct disorders of health. And though the understanding is that wherever the energy, qi, goes, blood follows. So it has a lot to do with circulation. And the understanding of Oriental medicine is essentially, in some ways, the understanding of the function and circulation of the body. They believe it to be hydrostatic in nature. And so those hydrostatic pressures are maintained by keeping fluids in certain compartments in the body. And you can lose fluids from compartments, like sweating is a way to lose fluids and energy.
I'm just going to ask you a question real fast there. Someone is hearing this for the first time. I don't want them to think that sweating is bad. So, at what point when they do sweat and it is hydrostatic based, they can in fact block some flow. Is that what you're saying?
No, what I'm saying is that the body maintains its hydrostatic pressures by moving fluids from one compartment to another. And one of the ways that it can release fluids from the body is by sweating. The body is capable of closing the pores and stopping that process as well.
Okay, great. I'm sorry. Then I just wanted to make sure there was a clarification because I didn't want people to hear that and say, sweating's not good for me.
No, sweating can definitely be good for you. It can help to release a lot of excess heat.
So if I'm looking, when I put the show together, I was looking to trigger certain areas of health and wellness, just like health and wellness, chronic issues, chronic pain, acute issues, relatively anything. I believe that acupuncture can handle pretty much any ailment in the body. Is that correct? Am I assuming correctly?
Well, acupuncture, herbology, there's a practice of Tui Na, which involves much of which we experience here in the United States as physical therapy, but is actually under a different designation. They call it TWINA, which is a combination of chiropractic massage therapy and physical manipulations, very much like physical therapy. And then there's lifestyle modifications, there's diet therapy, there's, you know, emotional consultations. There's a really big scope of modalities that are included in Oriental medicine, acupuncture being one of them. For certain situations, like if somebody is very malnourished, diet therapy and herbology is more important than acupuncture. For conditions associated with chronic pain, acute pain, certain types of digestive disorders that are functional in nature, acupuncture is very good.
Okay, great. And Scott, where does dry needling fit into what Kathleen has said, and how is it different?
Okay, I think dry needling is kind of an evolving technique, and it started about 8 or 9 years ago, and I think it evolved mainly from injection therapy, Western injection therapy, where we were injecting pharmaceuticals and steroids, and they started using other solutions like sugar solutions, and they started noticing that they were getting a similar effect from not injecting anything at all, just by using needling. And the focus was really on pain. It was on trying to add to the repertoire of treatments that we have, the options we have for treating pain. And it slowly evolved into using the small filiform needles, which are really acupuncture needles. But the cognitive kind of understanding comes from almost an opposite point of view as Chinese medicine, where we're looking at physiology, we're looking at anatomy, we are looking at afferent nerve situations, and looking more for like physical causes of pain and noticing that these needles are having a beneficial effect. And so then from there, research was done, which is kind of in an infancy stage at this point. And during that process of kind of discovery almost of almost a new technique, as physical therapists would understand it to be, and different than acupuncture because they don't have the understanding of chi, of energy. They are thinking that there were, that, and I'm speaking from both points of view because I'm licensed in both. As physical therapists, we're thinking that this is a physically based technique that's having some impact on our ability to positively move people into more functional ability and to reduce their pain.
Okay, so if I'm to understand this, when I do this show, I'm just kind of always putting myself from the perspective of the listener. So if I'm to understand this, you both use needles. Would that be correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, and are they the same kind of needles?
They're
yes.
Exactly the same needles.
Yep.
Okay, and they're not injection needles. So maybe we should back up a little bit and just explain the needle, because there are some people who have a real aversion to needles, and if they hear this, they go, "Oh, a needle." But they're not the same as the kind that you may be injected with from the doctor's office, correct?
Yeah, they're so small that a number of them can usually fit inside the lumen of a hypodermic needle.
Okay, and so is it? It is invasive, but how invasive are these procedures?
It depends on the area of the body that is being needled. Some areas, like in the buttock, around the sciatic nerve, the thigh. Maybe if you're inserting a needle down a channel instead of perpendicularly into the body, you can use a needle that may be, you know, 3 inches, 5 inches, there's even 12-inch long needles. But I would say most of the time they're about an inch to an inch and a half long that are most commonly used. Some are even shorter, about a quarter to a half an inch, depending on the location. Like an ear needle might be only a quarter inch long.
Okay. And so if I know that, and I know it's not the physician needle and I'm going to be absolutely injected, so that gives me a little bit of a comfort level. But how do I know like, Scott, why would I come to you as a physical therapist for dry needling versus Kathleen for you for acupuncture? And so what specific, is there a difference between what you do? I mean, Kathleen, you mentioned before the Ashi points and the trigger points, and Scott, what do you target and how is it different?
Okay, I would say that that the word trigger point is a word that we use in the physical therapy world commonly, but that's evolving also. And I want to say that when we go and look at research for like neck ailments or for low back pain, we're mainly looking at research studies that are designed using meridian points, and those are points on the acupuncture meridian. So what's happening is that as physical therapists are starting to kind of look into this area and develop their own techniques, as they're thinking they're discovering something new, they're starting to use a lot of the protocols that are developed by acupuncture physicians that are based on traditional Chinese medicine diagnosis and the meridians themselves. And they're finding results. So that's the surprising thing for them, is that they're seeing results. But at the same time, the understanding from the physical therapy world is this is not a manipulation of qi. This is relaxing muscles. It's increasing blood flow to area. It's reducing inflammation, kind of stimulating a healing process that they can't achieve using other modalities that they currently use.
Okay, and Kathleen, I guess, Scott, that was an excellent. That was absolutely excellent. Thank you for all of that. I'm still, as a person just listening to this, I'm still trying to figure out how it is that I know I can figure out the difference in what actually works for me. So, can you guys kind of help me with that? Because, again, I always put myself from the perspective of the listener.
It may be different from state to state, but in many areas, an individual would be referred to a physical therapist. They wouldn't necessarily choose physical therapy just out of the blue. It would be coming from maybe an orthopedic doctor or their primary care physician who would order the physical therapy, whereas it would be much more likely in most areas, unless it was only under the designation of an MD's order, that an acupuncturist could treat a patient, which is common in some states. I think Ohio is still like that. A person would choose to go to an acupuncturist on their own volition. They wouldn't necessarily be referred by another medical practitioner. That's one difference between the two that, you know, is pretty significant, you know. And because of that difference, there's more likelihood in some ways that a physical therapist treatment would be under insurance coverage, whereas an acupuncturist treatment would be perhaps less likely.
Okay, that was my next question.
And that makes a difference for an individual, you know, who refers them, if anybody refers them, and if it's covered in, you know, mainstream medical insurance.
Okay, and so, but for the most part, from what I'm understanding, is that they do a lot of the same kinds of things. Do they affect the same types of changes?
I
mean,
think they do.
In terms of positive changes for what the overall goal is, right? I mean, everybody's looking for a positive change.
Right. And, you know, in a physical therapy perspective, you know, Scott mentioned relief of pain and increased function. And in especially the sports area of sports medicine area of acupuncture, that is also one of the main goals. And that's been shown in studies coming from China that acupuncture based on treating musculoskeletal disorders often does result in rapid relief of pain and the ability for the person to have ongoing function, even high-level training, you know, while they're working through an injury.
Okay. I'm going to put you on hold for a minute and remind everybody that you're listening to the Whole Scoop Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Carol Ferraci, a licensed registered dietitian and founder of Naturally Nutrition. You can check me out at www.naturallynutritioninc.com. We're talking tonight about acupuncture versus dry needling, which one is right for you, with Kathleen Levy, and Scott Barnett. You can find Kathleen Levy. Kathleen, do you want to give that again? Is it kathleen.levy@gmail.com?
That's correct.
And Scott at stillpointtherapycenter.com. Okay, and that being said, in terms of, you know, the pain management, the sports medicine, I'm not hearing much of a controversy here. And one of the things that I did when I was doing research for the show is that I saw a lot of research, or I mean not research, but I saw a lot of comments in terms of, you know, dry needling is better than acupuncture. You should always see a physical therapist. You should see it as opposed to an acupuncturist, or vice versa, I saw. So, you know, what is that about? Because it sounds to me like you guys really don't disagree too much.
Yes, I would say that we're both, the goals are similar. I'd say that there's some big distinctions. First of all, physical therapists are trained in mostly manual therapy and exercise and modalities for restorative purposes, mostly related to pain or recovery from injury. Whereas acupuncturist is really the whole Chinese medicine system is a full system that treats all types of diseases. The other main difference that I see is in the training. You know, a physical therapist that's certified in dry needling, as I am, could actually do as little as 50 hours of training in dry needling to become certified, whereas an acupuncture physician is someone who's trained for many, many years. And I, having gone through both trainings, I would say that the acupuncture training is by far more encompassing, and I would say they're more well qualified to use that modality than physical therapists are.
Also, I just want to mention that one of my major concerns about the use of dry needling techniques by physical therapists and chiropractors is that an acupuncturist has to go through a course that was developed in conjunction with the Council of Colleges and the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, in the prevention of transmission of disease during dry needling techniques. It's called the Clean Needling Technique, and it's one of the courses that I teach. And I find it interesting that, you know, acupuncturists, as part of their board examinations, you know, have to complete this course, but other people doing in needling therapy that's very, very similar technique to acupuncture, using the same tools, actually are not required to have that type of training. And they also are not required to take that test. And I think that's something that needs to be addressed on a national level.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I would... You know, if I'm gonna have something done by someone, I'm gonna assume that there's an aseptic technique that's already in play. So, yeah, that's kind of something that that's a little disturbing for me to even hear. So, yeah, I would tend to agree with you, Scott. Do you have any input on that?
I would agree with Kathleen. I think that the weak area in dry needling, as I see it, is the minimal training that's required to be certified. I also feel that what's going to happen, or what could potentially happen in the physical therapy arena, is that there's no stopgap to allowing physical therapists to learn more and to start adding in almost trying to practice things that really are outside of their scope of practice. And right now, the American Physical Therapy Center, or the our national organization, has endorsed dry needling as within the scope of practice of physical therapy. However, that's on a very limited basis. And about 25 states right now agree and license physical therapists to do dry needling.
So if it's on a limited basis, are there only a couple, I'm just assuming, and please fill in the blanks here, are there only a few modalities that can actually be done via a physical therapist in dry needling? So if someone has a pain management, is that one of them? Because there's a couple of things that go through my head as I'm listening to both of you. First of all, I know a couple of medical doctors, one in particular that is also an acupuncture physician. And she actually told me that becoming an acupuncture physician was absolutely more grueling than going to medical school and doing the residency. You know, that kind of goes hand in hand with what you guys just defined. And then when you look at, please don't misunderstand this next comment. I mean, physical therapists are very exceptionally well-trained and highly knowledgeable. But at the same time, it's different. It's a different type of knowledge and a different type of training than what the acupuncture physician is trained to do. So my question then goes to both of you in terms of, I'll go back to the first one. Dry needling then, is it limited to certain modalities, or are you telling me that they're looking to expand on any and all modalities? And if so, then Kathleen, both of you as acupuncture physicians, how do you feel about that? Because that kind of usurps some of the training that you've worked really hard to achieve.
Yeah, I agree. And one of the other issues is that acupuncture needles are only supposed to be sold to licensed acupuncturists. You know, that's a statement that came out of the FDA. And I'm interested in how physical therapists are ordering needles if they're not licensed to own them. You know, it's an issue that really needs to be addressed on a national level instead of just state by state. And, you know, I have done some research on the origins of physical therapy. And the origins of physical therapy are actually attributed to a man named Heinrich Ling. And he got his information about the practice that he developed and eventually has been named physical therapy from a Chinese man whose name was Ming, and he studied with him for 7 years. Mr. Ming was a martial arts practitioner and a Tui Na practitioner. Tui Na is the use of massage, physical therapy-type maneuvers, and chiropractic-like maneuvers. It's a separate but joined practice. Like, we teach Tui Na techniques to a certain level at our college. There's definitely further training that can be achieved in that area. The Tui Na practitioners of China are educated at a doctorate level. They don't use acupuncture needles, but they do almost the exact types of techniques that physical therapists, massage therapists, and chiropractors do in this country. There's also very few organizations for physical therapists or physical therapists in China, because that role is done by Tui Na practitioners. So I believe that physical therapy is actually an offshoot of Chinese medicine, and that it should be acknowledged as such, chiropractic as well. They should understand their origins and perhaps have more training in the theory behind those practices.
Interesting. That's an excellent point. Scott, do you have anything to add to that particular point? And before you do, let me remind some people, we've got a bunch of callers. If you have any questions, please remember to press the number 1, and that will indicate to me that you have a question right now. I see a bunch of callers, but just remember to press the number 1, okay? Scott, do you have anything about that? And then we've got some blog questions that I'm going to kind of get to in a minute.
Okay. All right. Well, what I wanted to just put in there was that, you know, at the end of the day, we both have patients that are coming to us with needs. Physical therapists are wanting to help people. They're wanting to look for as many ways as they can to help people. I think that their intentions are good, and I think that there's some room for them to work in that arena, you know, with a limited amount of knowledge they have in needling and dry needling. But I just think that, you know, the disservice is being done to the Chinese Oriental medical community in this country, and that, you know, part of the unfairness is the insurance industry and their failure to look at research, to look at evidence, and to acknowledge and to understand that what Chinese medicine has to offer needs to be more valued and needs to be paid for. And I think that if the consumer could choose, then they could decide where they feel more comfortable going, where they're getting the most benefit, and I think that would be the fairest system.
Scott, I was curious if you know how physical therapists are billing for dry needling, because acupuncture is not covered by Medicare or Medicaid, and
right.
with your specialty in geriatrics, you must deal with a lot of patients who are with those types of services, Medicare especially. If acupuncture cannot be billed, and if physical therapy is essentially doing acupuncture, how are they billing it?
Well, this is a very gray area right now, and I'm just going to paraphrase what I understand the American Physical Therapy Association to say on this topic, which is that they do believe that dry needling is within the scope of practice of PT, but they're not going to go as far as, and they're calling it manual therapy, but they won't go as far as to say how to bill for it. And there's a number of insurance companies that have actually made statements in saying that dry needling is still in the experimental phase, and they refuse to pay for that. So there are many physical therapy clinics. Patients are paying a separate fee for dry needling if they choose to have it. But this is an ongoing debate, and I think that at some point Medicare is going to have to make a determination as to what exactly they're going to pay for. If they want to call it manual therapy or they're going to use injection therapy codes, the physical therapy community is going to need clarity as to what's covered and what isn't. And right now, I think there's a grayness there. And it makes sense because this is kind of a new area. And like I said, it was about 8 years they've been doing or developing these techniques. And Medicare moves much slower than that.
Okay. I think that's it in a nutshell. When you're talking about people and reimbursement, it's an issue that really needs to really be outlined a little bit better. But I don't know. That sounds like a very slow moving kind of process but yet the practice is being done on both ends. So I really do believe that you're right, Scott, that if people would know, if people had the option of making a choice, I think what you said is just apropos, in that if people had the option of making a choice, then maybe the insurance companies might stand up and wake up and do some things that they should be doing. Let me get to a couple of blog questions here. First question is, why is it called dry needling? Do we know the answer to that? I mean, because it implies, it says, what is dry needling, and does that mean that acupuncture, what is the difference in terms of wet versus dry? That's the question, kind of. It's paraphrased.
Okay, I can answer that question simply. Dry needling from a Western medicine point of view just means you're not injecting anything. So it's a needling technique that there's no medicine going into the body.
Okay, and that clears that up. Thank you for that. I think there's a whole lot of words there. I'm hoping if I answered your question, if I paraphrased it the right way, please blog back in and let us know. We've also got another question that says, I've had 3 back surgeries and numerous epidurals to little or no avail. I do some physical therapy and have had therapeutic massages with just minimal and temporary benefits. Would I be a candidate for either approach, or which would be more beneficial?
Definitely.
I think that any individual who has chronic pain may have a complicated situation going on. And so if they are not getting results with physical therapy, exercise, stuff like that I would recommend seeing an acupuncturist. I think that an acupuncturist could certainly help with improving the circulation. They could help with improving the condition of the musculature, the internal organs. It's very common for emotional distress to bring about psychosomatic changes in the body. And acupuncture is very well adapted for treating emotional distress that is being somatized into physical pain as well.
I would like to answer just by saying that I think either technique is absolutely beneficial, and that as a matter of fact, I believe that before a patient insurance pays for a patient's spinal surgery, that they should undergo a trial period of both. I would recommend acupuncture, but even dry needling with physical therapy before they pay for any surgery. So I'm a true believer in both techniques, and I think that definitely they should seek that way. And I do agree with Kathleen in that if things are more complex than just spasming muscles, restrictions, blocked pathways in that area, that seeing an acupuncturist, you're going to get a more well-rounded evaluation, and there'll be treatment options that they can provide that a physical therapist trained just in dry needling could not provide.
Okay, so that brings me to another question, because if you know, the whole thing about these two modalities or these two what is it, practices, basically there are, Scott, based on what you just said, then I'm assuming there are particular areas in which acupuncture is far more extensive than the dry needling technique. And could you guys kind of maybe go through some of those areas so people can know? Because remember, we may have some people that have never been familiar with acupuncture or dry needling, and it'd be kind of like, well, what would I use it for? And we're talking on back pain tonight. You know, we talked a little bit about back pain. We talked a little bit about pain in general. But there's so much more that I found with acupuncture. So can you guys kind of elaborate on what specifically you would use acupuncture for? Or dry needling?
In kind of an oversimplified view, when you're working with local areas, physical therapists, that's their concept. They want to treat the knee, they want to treat the shoulder, they want to treat a specific area of the body. With an acupuncturist, what they're treating is more the whole person, and they're considering other systems. They're considering how your body produces and makes blood, how things circulate, all kinds of things, organ function, how other disease processes in the body may also have an effect on your chronic pain, and changing those things will definitely change the outcome. Even if you're just getting basic physical therapy, I would recommend that you also look into seeing an acupuncture physician.
Okay, and so let's just get, Kathleen, did you want to say something? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I just wanted to say also that one of the concepts that's very commonly used in acupuncture is that treating someplace distal from the pain is very effective. So, for instance, I may treat the very tip of the ear to alleviate pain in the shoulder or the leg or the foot, and it's extremely effective. I may choose to insert acupuncture needles in areas of the scalp that lay over portions of the brain that I'm trying to stimulate or revive after a stroke. Acupuncture can be extremely effective in treating the cardiac rhythm. There's points on the body that can actually slow down, speed up the heart, and treat arrhythmias. That's just a small example of some of the scope available in acupuncture.
Well, and I think it's important for people to realize that there is a scope to acupuncture. I mean, what about things like Parkinson's disease? Can you help with that? Or is that just something that you know, we're not able to...
The Chinese have recently discovered that there's an area in the back of the skull, in the occipital region on the left side, that is associated with the release of dopamine. It can either increase or decrease the release of dopamine, and that's one of the most recent innovations in the treatment of Parkinson's disease from the perspective of acupuncture.
And so if
just
you...
stimulating, needling the scalp over an area that is known to control the release of dopamine has been shown to be effective in the treatment of Parkinson's disease just recently.
Wow. Wow. See, and I was just kind of shooting from the hip and saying, well, what about Parkinson's?
Well, the other thing that's very interesting is that they are starting to put together information that shows that autism may actually be a disease that's associated with excessive amounts of dopamine in the brain, and they're using that same area for the treatment of autism.
Interesting. And is that new information, or is that...
It is new information. There was a doctor that I studied with who came from China about 20 years ago, and this is part of her research. She's actually a neurologist, and the last book that she wrote before she died included this information. It's a book titled The Cerebellum.
Interesting. Wow. That's fascinating. If acupuncture, which we now know acupuncture encompasses many, many different areas, then how do you find a good acupuncturist? And should you consider, is it something to consider for whatever, like Scott said before? Scott, you know, another great point you brought up where everybody should see an acupuncturist prior to having some kind of other issue going on or treatment going on. But at this point, should people consider, is it correct to consider acupuncture prior to maybe some other traditional, conventional interventions? Would that be a correct assumption on someone's part?
Well, my point of view would be that Chinese medicine can work in conjunction with Western medicine. Chinese medicine, in many instances, that model of analysis and that paradigm sometimes finds insights into treatment that's more effective than Western medicine and vice versa. So there's really, if we should look at it as not a controversy, but more as an additional benefit to people's health, is that we can look at different systems around the world and we can see what's been proven to work, and we can integrate those systems together, and not everything is going to work for everybody, and so I don't want people to think that it's a magic answer for every problem and that it works immediately, and you know there's not a process of healing or recovery. These things that you know we're working with nature, and nature takes time. And so I just want people to understand that it's not a magic answer, you know, that these are effective treatments. They should be pursued, and they should be valued equally to a lot of the wonderful breakthroughs that we've had with Western medicine.
Okay, great. We've got a couple of call-ins now with questions. I'm going to do one blog question first, because it's kind of an adjunct to what we were just talking about, so before maybe somebody else is changing the subject. But it says, where can someone read the research on autism and acupuncture and how to keep a child with autism who has sensory issues to stay still for acupuncture? That's a good point. You know, you've got an autistic child and they've got sensory stimulation issues. How do you do that with acupuncture?
I've had some experience with that, and as far as the research goes, what I read was out of this book. It came out of China. It's called The Cerebellum, and there's a Dr. Lin, L-I-N, who's one of the authors. I don't have it in front of me, so I don't have the other author's name, but that was where I read about it. The information was exciting to me because I did have experience working with a very hyperactive, autistic young woman. She was a child at the time I worked with her. She was about 8, 9 years old. She was still in diapers. She was pretty uncontrollable. if she wasn't restrained in a household, she would rip everything off the walls. So her mother was in close attendance. And what we used to do, because I was using a lot of scalp acupuncture with her at the time, and she didn't like it. She was resistant. We would put her in a car seat, in a chair, so that she couldn't get up. And then her mother would sit with her and restrain her hands and talk to her and comfort her while I needled her scalp. And after we got the needles in, she was very quiet and relaxed about it. She didn't try to remove the needles. And we would just stick with her and stay with her until the treatment was over to keep her from removing any. But she never really tried to remove any. So I would say that with a strong-willed parent who is willing to help to restrain the child temporarily while the needles are placed, that it certainly is a viable option. And in general, I've worked with a lot of children, and at first they're a little frightened, but frequently, a little bit later, after one or two treatments, they become very acceptable and compliant. I had one little boy who was about 3 years old who would actually come to his mother and tell her that he needed to come for acupuncture because he had chronic ear infections, and when his ears started to bother him, he would let her know right away. He'd hold his hands out and say, acupuncture. So, children are actually good candidates for acupuncture.
Right. Okay, let's go to the board here for a minute, and let's get a couple of callers in. 3220. Do you have a question?
Hello to all of you. I was just wondering if there's any benefit from either of your services for people with glaucoma.
Yes, glaucoma is one of the things that I treat. I'm working with a woman right now who has a resistant form of glaucoma. She was going to have to go to surgery, and instead she came to me to see if we could do something because she'd already had surgery in the eye and it wasn't working anymore, and they were talking about more. And what's going on now is that she's on herb therapy. She receives acupuncture about once a month, and she's getting very good readings from her ophthalmologist. She's really pleased with the results.
Oh, thank you. That's
You're
encouraging.
Welcome.
Thank you for calling. Let's see. We'll go to 6121. 6121, do you have a question?
Yes, I did have a question, but then I got so interested in what Kathleen was saying about the autism, I'm changing my question. when you were talking about the young girl, what happened with her? Did the acupuncture help end up, you know, helping her autism?
You know, it's difficult
improving
to tell. She had a really severe case of autism, and she still does. She's in her early 20s now, and I think she's just gotten out of diapers. She's still nonverbal, and she really requires constant attention. During the period of time that I was doing acupuncture on her, which lasted about a year, she did speak two or three times, which she had not done in the past, but it didn't keep up. She did have quite a bit of behavioral therapy, which also helped. And to tell you the truth, I'm not sure how much the acupuncture was effective. It was difficult to tell because her behavior was very extreme. She did seem to be calmer during the acupuncture and after the acupuncture for a day or so, because she was very prone to running off and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I can't tell you if it was very effective.
Okay. Well, my other question...
I have had other children who were much less severely affected by autism who have had benefits, who had better learning, had better... ability to express themselves, but not that particular girl.
Oh, okay.
So you've seen it, so Kathleen, you've seen it be beneficial, but maybe not in all cases, is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying, yes.
Okay. And you had a follow-up question?
Well, yes, actually, I am familiar with acupuncture and a lot of the Chinese medicine and, you know, the theories of meridians and, you know, seeing the acupuncture points on the charts and so forth. So I understand what, you know, traditional Chinese medicine doctors are are trying to do when they're going after certain points, you know, if they're explaining things. I understand that. How did the physical therapists who are doing dry needling, what do they use as their criteria to pick certain points to needle? How do they pick points?
Well, that's an interesting question because it started off with trigger points. And some of the MDs like Travell and others that have had written research documents. And basically what we did was we actually palpated these points out and we used those locations for dry needling. But that is changing. And the main reason it's changing is because the body of research that's trying to support the use of dry needling is using meridian points. And what they're finding is that those meridian points are actually working better than the trigger points.
So I mean, if I were having, say, knee problems and I was at a physical therapist, would they then be using meridian points that are around my knee? I mean, would they kind of be, like you said, working in the area of where the problem is?
Yes. They'd be working mostly in the local area, but they're actually starting to look at distal points, kind of as like Kathleen was describing, that kind of a concept, and it's a Chinese concept. And they started off basically with painful points, with points around swelling, and it's evolved to using some of the points in the channels, in the meridian channels that run through that area.
All right, thank you.
Thank you so much,
Scott,
for calling.
Scott, could I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it sounds like even though they initially, the Physical Therapy Association initially stated that they are not doing acupuncture, that they are starting to actually practice more along the theories of acupuncture instead of just using Western medical theories.
I would say that they don't understand the concept of meridians, and they don't believe in the concept of the flow of chi and this whole idea of an electric energetic system that's wireless. What they have seen is that if they use those points, and they describe them as anatomical points, so they will describe them as a location, but not necessarily a number on a meridian. But
right.
They're the same.
But acupuncture points are also described by their location. I mean, that's one of the more common questions on acupuncture boards. It's the student's given a location and say, what point is this?
That's right.
Yeah.
And so how it's being how physical therapists are being trained is kind of a protocol approach. So if somebody mm-hmm. has a knee pain, for example, they would be taught certain protocol points along with palpatory points, and they could choose to use whatever points they wanted to treat that patient, and they could call that dry needling, but some of those points invariably would be points on the meridians.
And I've heard statistics that somewhere between like 82 and 89% of the points that physical therapists use are acupuncture points.
Yeah, I can't answer to that question, but I do know that I would, from what I studied, probably at least 50% were.
Okay.
So that's all really fascinating because I'm still trying to help people decipher between the two, and I think Kathleen, you kind of closed the circle there a little bit with, you know, that's why we're not able to close that circle because maybe one area is moving into another here. Go ahead.
The Florida Board of Acupuncture is claiming that dry needling is acupuncture.
Okay.
That's their stand on it.
But I want to, you guys were talking and you were saying the distal points versus the painful points and the caller who had called in had said, you know, if you're doing dry needling, are you going to do, like, if I have a knee issue, are you going to do around my knee? And I've had acupuncture before, and I know that's not necessarily exactly what would happen. You would do a distal point. So just for our audience's sake, and one more time. I know that you went through the meridians, but maybe we could just simplify it. Say, if you have a knee pain and you're getting some acupuncture, it may not be the knee where the needle goes. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that that very possibly could be the knee and other points, or it may not be the knee.
And
it really all on the patient's condition.
Yeah, well, I would say that typically there would be knee points involved, but there probably would be distal points as well. And the main difference between a physical therapist doing dry needling is they're going to be their way of thinking is treat the leg, treat the knee, and whereas an acupuncturist they may be thinking treat the whole person, and part of their problem is knee problem. And we find that chronic pain and patients that don't respond to typical physical therapy might require more than just that local treatment.
Okay.
I would agree with that.
So that brings me to a follow-up that the first caller had with the glaucoma. The effectiveness of that, Kathleen, have you seen? I mean, the readings of your patient have improved, but what about the eyesight? Has that improved?
At the point that she was at, she was not experiencing a lot of change in vision. She was mostly experiencing discomfort. And she was aware of the problem because of visual exams. But
okay.
It was at a point where her ophthalmologist was quite concerned, and he was going to go back to the surgical route because the medications were not working.
Okay. Listen, we're going to go. We have one more caller with a question. I want to get that in because we're running out of time. 4977, do you have a question?
Yes, I have a general question. Would it be beneficial to go to an acupuncturist on a regular basis just for a general checkup? And what would be involved in that?
Generally, acupuncture is also considered to be a good form of preventive medicine. So I have quite a large clientele who come for regular checkups that aren't really suffering from anything but want to make sure that they don't get sick. And in ancient China, physicians were paid to keep people well, and it basically came out of the doctor's pocket if the patient got sick. So that's been a long tradition. And what would be entailed would be a questioning the patient, assessing the patient's pulse and tongue. There may be other assessment techniques like palpation techniques of the abdomen, observation of the ear, and then perhaps a treatment which would treat things that weren't actually manifesting on a level that the patient would be complaining about, but that would be something that would be found in the pulse or the tongue that would be a warning sign that there's a problem starting that could become more complicated if not treated immediately. And I would say that in the course of febrile diseases, you know, colds and flus, that's one of those times where a person might want to seek out care from an acupuncturist, especially so that they can have a full recovery, because it's well known in Chinese medicine that colds and flus can degenerate into chronic problems. So treating them when they're superficial and early is a really good idea.
Interesting. I could probably use that myself right now. Do you have another question?
Thank you very much. No,
thank you for calling
you
in. On that note, we're going to have to kind of close the show a little bit, but this is actually even more informative than I even envisioned this show. So I'm wondering if maybe we could do a follow-up show to and maybe talk specifically about particular issues and how these areas can actually affect a positive change for them. Are you guys open for that possibly?
Yeah, that would be fine.
Of course.
Scott, you're okay with that?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, I can't thank you enough for doing this tonight. And everyone, thank you for calling in and blogging in. We're always just very excited when we see all that all the interaction. It's so great to have that interaction. And remember, you can still follow us on Facebook and Instagram and whatever. And we will have, we're going to be taking the next 2 weeks. Usually we do a show every 2 weeks. We're going to take that. We're going to take the next 2 weeks off, and we're going to be back on July 9th. And we're going to take a little turn from what we've normally done, and we're going to examine the nutritional value of biblical foods. And we've got a registered dietitian with a biblical scholar coming on. And I think it'll be a great show. It'll be pretty interesting. We'll see you on July 9th at 7 p.m. at www.blogtalkradio.com/thewholescoop. Thank you so very much for joining us. Remember, I'm your host, Carol Ferraci. You can find me at www.naturallynutritioninc.com. This show tonight was with Kathleen Levy, and you can find her at kathleen.levy@gmail.com. And Scott Barnett, you can find him at stillpointtherapycenter.com. Thank you so much for joining me, and have a great night, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are you still on the line, Scott?
Yeah.
I don't know if Carol's still on the line or not. I think she was talking about calling us back. So.
Oh, yeah. I just got another call on her line.
Okay. Well, I'm going to hang up, and then she'll call me back probably, too. Bye-bye.
Okay. All right. All right. I'll talk to you soon, Kathleen.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hello?
Hello?